With a budget deal locked down for the year and some upward-looking economic indicators, what should we expect next from the U.S. economy?
Here to help us get a handle on what might be coming soon to an economy near you is Robin Farzad. He's a senior writer for Bloomberg Businessweek. Robin, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Wisconsin.
Well, Americans have been waiting and waiting for things to turn around when it comes to the U.S. economy. And lately we've seen some strong economic indicators seem to be pointing in the right direction. So is it safe to say we're out of the woods?
No, it's really a tale of two economies. If you're in New York and Wall Street is having really its best year in almost a decade, and IPOs are great, and junk bonds, you can't sell enough of them, and there's all this enthusiasm about tech stocks, and there's this sense of buoyancy in corporate America. But back in Main Street, people are still unemployed. They're underemployed. You have a record number of 20-somethings still living with their parents, a backlog of people who can't get jobs out of college. And you just haven't seen this kind of bifurcation in a long time.
What do you make of it? What do you think it's coming from?
There's an odd disconnect in that typically when Wall Street and companies see their share prices and their fortunes this high, they would turn around and say, we can't leave money on the table. We have to turn around and hire people. There's a return on investment implied, I think, in bringing people on. But they have for the longest time just hoarded cash, have allowed their cash flow and their cash balances and their profits to stockpile. And they've learned to do more with less. At the same time, there's been a tremendous amount of offshoring. And there's so much slack in the economy that companies and small businesses realize that they have the clout. They can name their price in terms of wages. There are people with tons of experience who are willing to work on part-time terms or for less than what they've traditionally made. So that imbalance is still very pronounced in the economy.
Well, the Fed seems to think that things are looking good. They've said that they're going to start withdrawing more and more. At least they're going to stop. They're going to scale back the cash infusions to the economy. So what does that mean when we're seeing less Fed interference?
Well, less Fed interference, I mean, it's a relative observation if you think about it, because we're still at zero interest rate policy, and we've been at zero interest rate policy since December of 2008. That is the main lever of stimulus that the Federal Reserve controls. But when that wasn't enough to take rates down to zero, they came out with quantitative easing, which was just conjuring up rounds and rounds of trillions of dollars to buy up assets such as mortgage securities and treasuries to keep them low so people can go out and refinance and companies can partake in record low borrowing costs. We're just talking about the Fed taking $10 billion a month off the table. Nothing about finally taking rates up or ending quantitative easing. So this goes to show how tender the economy is and how the Fed is really walking on eggshells to be careful to not spook anybody. After all, when Ben Bernanke gave some testimony in the spring and merely mentioned the possibility of a taper, you saw markets have what's now called a taper tantrum in the summer. And so the Fed's being very cautious, especially as Mr. Bernanke is going to be handing off the torch to Janet Yellen.
So we have a new budget deal. Does that mean, you know, there's going to be a stabilizing influence on the economy, maybe good news, or what do you expect from that?
I think investors at least have learned to tune out the histrionics from Capitol Hill, whether you're talking about the fiscal cliff or the budgetary butte or the cash flow cliff or whatever you want to call it this year. And there are these man-made deadlines that come every December or January after we really punted on a very necessary deal when our credit rating was downgraded in 2011. The key thing to note here is what Congress is passing is still contractionary. This is not a stimulative budget by any stretch. The Fed is being stimulative still. It still has a campaign of something like $75 billion a month of quantitative easing in addition to zero interest rate policy. Congress is not out there cutting tax rebate checks to people at this point, and there's no unanimity over which way it should go. So in many respects, Pennsylvania Avenue is kind of ceded economic control to the Federal Reserve.
Well, so as you sit at your desk and you look at all the portents and think about what 2014 might hold, what does it look like to you?
Well, I hope, you know, and this is the patriot in me and the small-time investor and a person who has parents who have not been as gainfully employed as they could be. I hope that this finally trickles down or recourses to the rest of the economy. It's been so great for creditworthy companies, for junk issuers, for Wall Street firms. you would hope that there'd be a tipping point where some of this excess liquidity and this feeling of having a lot of cash and 2008 and 2007 being increasingly a distant memory, you would hope that would spread more to middle America and Main Street. And hopefully that could happen. We've seen stranger things in the past, obviously with the recession of the early 90s. If you go back and just read some of the things that were written in Time Magazine or Business Week back then, this was the biggest economic calamity in a generation. It was really bad and we didn't know what would get us out of it. And suddenly out of the blue comes something called Netscape and the internet, and suddenly it changed the conversation. And maybe something like that will happen here. People in the United States talk about the energy renaissance and North Dakota now being bigger than the smallest member of OPEC, and that could bring down costs for manufacturers. There's increasing evidence of onshoring, of companies bringing jobs back to the United States. So we'll see. Maybe you can expect the unexpected.
Is that the kind of thing we need to see for economic improvement before we can plant that mission accomplished flag in the ground?
Oh, gosh, mission accomplished. We're still in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't know. How many other missions are there to accomplish?
Maybe we shouldn't be using that word, right?
Oh, gosh, no. That's a very dangerous thing to say. And no one is really running victory laps in D.C. If you remember the Clinton presidency, he and Al Gore would almost daily in the old executive office building have some sort of event that highlighted how well the economy was doing. It was this very rare confluence of Wall Street being flush, middle America being flush. There was an investor class. You know, you started this segment by talking about the Dow at another record, and people almost roll their eyes when they say it. How many records has the market hit this year? And it's not affecting individual investors, people who have disproportionately been out of the market. They're still repairing their personal balance sheets after the trauma of 2008, which was like a once-in-a-generation trauma. So there's a lot to repair.
Now, I want to ask you about an idea out there that's gotten a little bit of play. It's bouncing around on the internet and the media. There have been some doomsdayers out there that have been getting a little attention, among them Donald Trump, CEO Peter Schiff, the Swiss economist Mark Faber. And they're basically saying, you know, we're all doomed, economically speaking. What we're in now is the calm before the storm. And the economy is poised to tank as never before, protect your wealth, all that kind of thing. What do you make of that?
Well, they say that a broken clock is right at least twice a day. And I think that's the case with some of the people that you mentioned. I mean, Peter Schiff, I like his stuff. He's delightfully shrill. He will come out and find a gray cloud for every silver lining. And you look back at the subprime crisis, and there were troubadours. There were people who effectively predicted stuff like this, like Nouriel Roubini and Nassim Nicholas Taleb. But by and large, the U.S. economy is hugely resilient, and 9 out of 10 times it will prove the doomsayers wrong. And there are people out there that make a living hoarding gold and warning of the apocalypse and building greenhouses way up in the mountains and in the countryside. And, let them do what they want to do. They're very often incorrect.
So given that, would you say that 2013 has been a good year economically for President Obama?
It has been. He got elected. He got reelected with a mandate. But the problem is that no one is really banking clout off of this. It's not like he could have parlayed what happened to him in 2012 and turned around and stuck it to the GOP on Capitol Hill. This is still an economy where individuals, mom and pop, small businesses are not feeling their oats as much as Wall Street and huge corporations are.
Robin, thank you so much for joining us, and happy holidays.
Always a pleasure. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Robin Farzad, senior writer for Bloomberg Businessweek.